Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymere Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymere.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at Graymere Church of Christ.
Scripture reading this morning will be Matthew chapter 5, verses 10 through 12. I'll be reading from the New International Version. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you.
In 2009, in Sage, California, there was an event that made the local news and then the national news. You may have heard about it, or you may remember it, because it's one of those that really stands out. There was a woman named Annalise Spray who woke up early on a Saturday morning to find that her three dogs, three chihuahuas that weigh approximately 3 pounds apiece, were barking very loudly. Now, if you have dogs, you know that dogs barking in the morning might not necessarily be out of the ordinary. But they were all very loud and insistently barking, and she could see that they were in the garage, and they were barking at something. And so instead of going into the garage, she went up to one of the bedrooms that had a window overlooking the garage. And that's where she saw that these three chihuahuas, a combined 12 pounds of guard dog, had cornered a full-grown mountain lion that had somehow made its way into the neighborhood, was probably looking for something to eat, and found these three chihuahuas, but they were so loud and so insistent that this mountain lion was frozen. And so she called the sheriff's deputies. Sheriff's deputies came out there. They called the wildlife people. The wildlife people, for 45 minutes, three chihuahuas held a full-grown mountain lion at bay before there were people there with the tranquilizer guns and able to take care of it. I don't know what I like more about that, if it's just the bravery of these three dogs or just the insistence or just the effects of how, if you're loud enough, that might stop people in their tracks. But I can imagine being awoken on a Saturday morning, just waking up, and then all of a sudden, there's a mountain lion in your garage. That would be a kind of a rough way to start the day. There are times in life like that where it's like we wake up and then all of a sudden we're dealing with something that we probably didn't see coming when we went to bed the night before. Something we probably couldn't have anticipated. And we know what that's like. We know what it's like to get that news, to see that happen, and to have to deal with it. We also know there are some things that we anticipate happening. Some things we know that are going to happen, and the question we have is, how am I going to prepare for it? And so it's interesting that as we've been going through the Beatitudes, thinking about what really makes people blessed, as Jesus has been going through this series of statements at the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount, he ends this series of statements not only with a blessing, but also with a warning, a reality check, that there will be persecution that will take place. And it's interesting as we read these passages that Jordan just read for us. You know, some have argued, are there really 8 Beatitudes? Are there 9 Beatitudes? If you go to the place where the Sermon on the Mount is celebrated, and the Mount of the Beatitudes, they call it, they've got a beautiful building there, and architecturally they've counted 8 Beatitudes. And so I don't know if that makes it official or not, but the question is, when Jesus talks about being persecuted, and he says that blessed are the persecuted, but then he says, blessed are you, seems like he's speaking directly to the people that are listening, saying, you are going to have to experience this too. Some have said, well, that's technically a 9th Beatitude. Either way, they're talking about the same thing. There's going to be some persecution coming. And when we flip through the pages of history, we see that that happens. We see that there are people who experience persecution that would be hard for us to imagine. For instance, we think about what took place in 203 AD when two women were in prison in the city of Carthage. One of them, named Perpetua, was from a wealthy family. And her father came to her and begged her to come home and raise her newborn baby. And the only way she could do that was to deny being a Christian. And she wouldn't do it. The second woman was one who was expecting a child. Her name was Felicity. She also refused to deny being a Christian. A third individual, over 100 years later, named Euphemia, faced the same choice. She'd refused to sacrifice to Ares, the god of war. She had been converted to Christianity, and she refused to renounce her Christianity. For all three of these, and for many others, that refusal to renounce Christianity, that determination to stay faithful, didn't just cost them persecution, it cost them their lives. History tells us that there's some powerful persecution that's happened to Christians over the years. Now, here's our challenge this morning in 21st century Columbia, Tennessee. Our challenge is to read this in a nice, air-conditioned building, in a comfortable setting, and to think about how this could possibly apply to our own situation. We don't live in a world that's dealing with those specific things. And even days, and we all have these days where we're frustrated or where we're down or it's just been an emotionally draining day, I've thought about the fact that as I pull open my phone and maybe I'm scanning through a Bible app for just a verse or something that could help encourage me, that as I'm dealing with discouragement, I'm doing so in a comfortable environment where I'm not worried about where I'm going to find my next meal, and I have access to technology that would have boggled the mind of generations that lived before. We are blessed by virtue of where we are, whether we often feel like it or not. We're blessed immensely. And so how do we relate to what's being said here? In fact, if I'm looking through the Gospels, and I think about the people Jesus is speaking to in the Sermon on the Mount, there are people that were dealing with the question of where's my next meal going to come from? How are we going to make it if I'm going day to day? I've got to get this taken care of today and this taken care of today. And then I flip through the pages and read in Matthew's gospel account after Jesus is crucified that he's buried in the tomb of Joseph Arimathea, who's described as an individual who's wealthy but had become a follower of Jesus. I think if we're really honest with ourselves, we resemble Joseph's position more than the others. We resemble individuals who are in a blessed society, in a blessed culture, who have decided to follow Jesus and are now hearing these words as we read them. Blessed are those who are persecuted. In fact, look at the way that he describes in verse 10. They've been persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. You probably remember at the very beginning of these Beatitudes, he started by saying, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. So now we've got brackets here around these Beatitudes. Both those who are poor in spirit, who realize their own spiritual poverty, and also those who are willing to deal with persecution for the sake of righteousness. And then in verse 11, he moves from these statements that apply to everyone, that in general, that could last throughout the years, and then he says specifically to you, blessed are you when people insult you and persecute you and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward in heaven is great. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. Now the terminology used here to describe persecution is used different ways in the New Testament. So sometimes it's used by Jesus to describe when family members are set against one another. Sometimes it's linked with arrest or murder or even physical violence. This word for persecution sometimes referred to those who are put to death. But it also, like in Matthew chapter 10, refers to being hated for the sake of Jesus. In other words, it's a flexible enough word that I think we can apply it in our lives with the understanding that persecution, as we might think of it, looks different for us than it certainly would have looked throughout history. But the principle Jesus is talking about here is an important one to prepare us for. And I think that if we try to stand where they stood and hear these words and try to take that in, and in the context of all of the Beatitudes, all of these unlikely situations in which people were blessed, I think there's a powerful principle for us here this morning. Jesus is clear they're going to have to deal with persecution. And it becomes very apparent that who they believed is going to determine what they experience. Who they believed, who they listened to, would determine what they experienced. We saw that lived out in those historical examples I mentioned. If they listened to Jesus, his teachings, if they were faithful to him, well, that was going to lead them down one path. If they decided to go with the flow of the culture and sacrifice to whoever everybody was sacrificing to, that would lead them down another path. But following Jesus would lead to unavoidable persecution. In fact, in John's Gospel, John 15, this is the way Jesus would describe it in verse 18. If the world hates you, you know that it has hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love its own, but because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, because of this, the world hates you. Remember the word that I said to you, a slave is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they kept my word, they will keep yours also. Jesus is saying, if you have lined up to follow me, you're going to receive the treatment that I've already received. Paul would tell Timothy in 2 Timothy 3 that all who desire to live godly lives in Christ Jesus will be persecuted. And so Jesus is clear that when people are persecuted for the sake of righteousness, they're blessed. It seems to be an echo of what Isaiah would record in Isaiah 51 when he describes this word from the Lord. Listen to me, you who know righteousness, a people whose heart is my law. Do not fear the reproach of men or be dismayed at their revilings. It's important because sometimes we might feel like persecution is punishment. What did I do to deserve this? Why is it so difficult for me to talk with my friends about these specific subjects? Because my faith gives me a different perspective. And why is that so challenging? I feel like we're being punished. And Jesus says, no, this is actually what we should expect. That this is positive proof that our faith is standing out. And there were several different ways that they would deal with this persecution. We've been going back and forth between Matthew 5 and Luke chapter 6 and the Sermon on the Plain. Here's what verse 22 of Luke 6 says. Blessed are you when men hate you and ostracize you and insult you and scorn your name as evil for the sake of the Son of Man. Those are some pretty specific ways that they were going to have to deal with persecution. They were going to be hated. There were people who would make a distinction, a determination about them, having nothing to do with getting to know them, but just because of who they followed. We know what that's like, don't we? When someone makes a call, they make a determination about you, they find something out about you, and they've already made their minds up, even before you've gotten to know them. Jesus says there are going to be some people who will hate you simply because of who you follow. And you'll be ostracized. That there would be not just physical ramifications, but also ramifications in your chosen field. If you determine that because I'm a Christian, I can no longer offer sacrifices to these individuals, I can no longer be part of these specific groups in the first century, these trade guilds that would require these sacrifices to pagan gods to be part of it, if I decide I can't do that anymore, well now, all of a sudden, I'm going to be ostracized. You're going to be insulted. Now, while there are several aspects of persecution in the ancient world and in the early church we can't identify with, I think insults is one that we've probably had to deal with, at least on some level. We don't live in a culture where faith to God is held up very highly. In fact, when's the last time that we watched something, saw a movie, TV show, something focusing on a spiritual matter where the person who is spiritual, where the person who is a Christian, was seen as an example or a role model? Usually it's the other way around. Usually it's trying to find the darkness that's inside this person who claims to be a good person. Or here's a behind the scenes of what's really happening. So being insulted because of our faith, that might be something that sounds a little more familiar. And even scorning your name is evil. Even the slander that would go through the church's history as people would come up with allegations to make in the Roman Empire against Christians, the things they had to deal with. We see all of these categories. But Christians viewed this as a sign of faithfulness. The apostles would rejoice that they were counted worthy to suffer because who they believed determined what they experienced. And the same is true for us. Who we believe is going to determine what we experience. If I believe what the message, prevailing message of my culture tells me, I'm going to live life one way. If I listen to the words of Jesus, I will live life another way. Now, it's important to remember that as we think about these different categories, we can think about our modern versions of this. Hatred. There might be times when people become upset with us. Maybe when we change our lifestyle. Maybe when we choose not to do something that someone else is doing because of our faith. That'll create some friction. Peter told Christians in 1 Peter 4 that they shouldn't be surprised when people start to malign them because they no longer run in the same excesses with them. They no longer run in the same circles. They no longer do the same thing. And so they shouldn't be surprised if there's some pushback. And sometimes that happens when people's behavior might remind someone, hey, my behavior needs to change. Being ostracized. Jesus would say in Matthew 10 that there are times when his teaching would set a father against a son. Being ostracized, even in a family situation, is difficult. I've shared before about a conversation that completely changed my perspective on this when I was in college and sat next to someone who was born and raised in Thailand and was describing his conversion. He had just recently been baptized, a college student. And that weekend, he had gone to tell his family. And his choice to become a Christian had cost him any inheritance, any place in the family business, and any room in his family's home to live. Sometimes in our own culture, and I know specifically for me growing up in a wonderful Christian environment, a very supportive place, I was blinded to the fact that there were other people for whom choosing to serve God ostracized them from their family, from their friends, from people that they loved. And they chose that anyway. What about insults? Think about the way Jesus was insulted during his ministry. He spent time with sinners, so he was accused of being a drunkard. He performed miracles, and sometimes because of his miracles, he was accused of having a demon. He was continually insulted. Maybe it looks different for us today. Maybe the insults that someone who's faithful receives are more like intellectual challenges. I can't believe you really believe. You still believe this. Who in their right minds would believe this? Or slander. In Luke, Jesus says we need to be wary if everybody's speaking well of us. If we follow Jesus, we're going to stand out. And if we're worried more about the reputation of others, it's good for people to have respect, but if that's my driving force, then that's changing what I experience. This kind of persecution is not punishment, it's evidence of faith. Now, keep in mind, when Jesus tells his disciples in Matthew that they'll be blessed if they're persecuted, it's persecuted for the sake of righteousness. In other words, it's persecuted for doing what's right. I can't just act like a mean, unthinking, uncaring person. I can't just say rude and crude things, and then if someone gives me any pushback, say, well, I'm just being persecuted for my faith. No, this is persecution for righteousness' sake. This is when we're not trying to draw anybody's anger. We're not trying to make anyone upset. We're just serving God, and it happens as a result. I know there are times, and maybe you've experienced this, having a conversation with someone whose words could best be described as just hateful, just kind of vengeful, accusing people of things and almost glad to be accusing people of sin. And then when people push back against that hatefulness, say, well, I'm just standing up for the truth. That's not what we want to do. That's not the persecution Jesus is talking about here. It's not a persecution of I can say and do hateful things and get that in response. It's what happens when all I'm trying to do is stand up for my faith. What we believe determines not only what we experience, but who we believe also determines how we experience what we experience. I know there's a lot of words there, kind of wordy, but think about it this way. Who they believed was going to determine not just what they experienced, but how they experienced it, how they dealt with it, what their approach was going to be. It wasn't just that in choosing Jesus, they were going to choose this pushback and persecution. They were also choosing a way to handle it. Jesus says that theirs is the kingdom of heaven. In other words, just like for those who recognized their poverty of spirit, what they needed, that understanding allowed them to focus on the real kingdom. Jesus is saying, those who are persecuted, you're focused on the right kingdom, on really belonging to the true kingdom. If all I was thinking about is the here and now, then if persecution threatened my reputation, or if being ostracized threatened relationships, or if it threatened whatever wealth that I had, if all I was thinking about was the here and now and those things were threatened, I would say, well, it's not worth it. I'll just do whatever it takes to go along with it because that's all that I have. Jesus reminds us there's a larger kingdom. There's a larger perspective. So even when I'm dealing with things that are uncomfortable here, believing in Jesus is going to change how I experience those things. It won't keep those things from happening. Jesus doesn't say, blessed are those who follow the paths of righteousness' sake, for they'll never be persecuted. That's the formula of a beatitude, right? These people are blessed because of this. No, he says they're going to be persecuted, but they're blessed because theirs is the kingdom of heaven. As much as we might like it and as much as it might sound so much more appealing, Jesus never says that our lives are going to be free from trials, pain, persecution. And I can look through history and I can see what Christians have endured and I can think to myself, you know, I've never had to experience that. But all of us are dealing with something, aren't we? All of us have had to deal with at least some kind of challenge as a result of our faith. None of us is exempt from that. And he says, you're sharing the role with prophets. This is what happened to the people who were speaking for God before you. Stephen, in the book of Acts, would tell religious leaders, Jewish religious leaders, which of the prophets did your fathers not persecute? Everybody who was telling the truth had to deal with persecution. So who we believe will determine what we experience. It also determines how we experience it. This morning, who I listen to is going to determine how I experience whatever it is I'm facing. And in a building this size and a group this size, people joining us online, there's a wide range of experiences right now. And how I experience that is going to largely be based on who I'm listening to. Who I'm listening to doesn't keep me from the tough experiences, but it helps me through those. I think of a story that Ron Allen tells about two of his friends. Friends that he met years ago, Wynn and Joe, who lived in the Philippines in the 1940s. And they were taken to an internment camp. And shortly after they were captured, a group was standing around and speculating on how long they would be there. Some thought it would be 1 year. Some thought 2 years. Others thought it would be three. And at the remark of it possibly being 3 years, about this horrific experience taking 3 years, Wynn replied, we can't last 3 years living like this. And to that, his friend replied, we don't have to live 3 years at once. We live one day at a time. They ended up being in prison there for over 4 years. And when they would tell that story, when Wynn would tell that story about trying to imagine what it would be like to deal with 3 years of this all at once, his friend said, "No, we don't have to do it all at once. We do it one day at a time." Isn't it amazing how just that change in perspective changes the way we experience something? What they were going to have to face, the experience itself didn't change. It was still going to be hard. It was still going to be tough. But when they had a different way of approaching it, that perspective change made all the difference. Who we believe not just determines what happens to us, but how we're going to react when those things do happen. When we're persecuted, we can know we're in good company. And maybe it might be helpful for me to ask myself, if I feel like I'm being challenged for my faith, if I feel like I'm dealing with whatever the modern level of persecution might be, am I responding the way God-fearers have in the past? Am I responding to it by deciding, okay, well, maybe standing up or standing out isn't all that important, so I'm just going to kind of go with the flow. I'll still believe, but I just won't say much about it. Well, if we look through the pages of the New Testament, that's not the example the apostles set. The apostles wouldn't stop. They refused to stop sharing the message of Jesus. Or maybe I respond to persecution, insults, slander. Maybe I respond in kind. Maybe I just give what I'm getting. And if someone insults me, I'll just insult them right back. And if someone is hateful to me, I'll be hateful right back, and I'll win the argument. But that's also not the example we see set for us in Scripture. We read Paul telling us, as much as it is possible, live at peace with others. We see Peter writing to Christians who were dispersed along a lot of different places, saying, live in such a way that when those try to accuse you, they won't have any grounds of accusation because of your behavior. Am I responding in the way God-fearers have responded in the past? Who I listen to, the voice that I allow to guide me, is going to determine how I experience these things. Now, I don't know what the next few years, the next few decades will look like. I don't know if there will be times when even things that are said in a sermon, principles from God's Word that decades ago would have been said without being challenged, now might be considered controversial because the stance of our culture and our culture's understanding of truth has changed. I don't know if that'll have any repercussions. I don't know if it'll be less likely for my children and for future generations to have a culture that props up and holds up Scripture in the Bible, or if that's going to be something that's looked down on. We don't know what the future's going to hold. But we know whatever happens, and whatever our version of persecution in our place might look like, who we listen to and who we believe, who we hold on to, the kingdom we're concerned with, is going to make all the difference in how we experience those things. It's also helpful for us to remember that while we're here today worshiping where we're not concerned about others coming in or any kind of persecution, we're not the only Christians in the world. There are Christians all over, and some of them are dealing with serious persecution, with governments that don't want them to assemble, with governments that don't like it when they do assemble, and have worked in various ways, in various laws, sometimes even physically removing people from those places. But in every context, no matter where we are, Jesus says that, yes, that persecution is going to happen. But when that happens, remember, you're blessed. You're part of the true kingdom. We've sung this morning one of the songs over the years. I remember singing it first in high school, and it stuck with me ever since, "The Sweet Adoration." But one of the verses in the chorus just struck me as I was sitting here worshiping this morning. At the end, "All of my trials are lost in your love. What a beautiful sentiment for us to focus on. All of my trials, whatever they are, the trials for the apostles, the trials for us, all of them, when we focus on the love God has for us, all of those are lost in His love. And who we believe makes all the difference. This morning, if you need to come to Jesus, if you need to put Christ on in baptism, if you need to think about all the challenges you face and realize that God's love has overcome anything and everything that could stand in our way, what we have to do is just submit to His will. If you want to put Christ on in baptism and begin living a life that's going to have trials, it's going to have challenges, we'll have some form of persecution, but live a life where you're listening to Jesus and He's guiding you every step of the way, you can do that this morning. And maybe there's another need that you have and you could use some prayers. Right after this worship service, if you want to go out that doorway, a couple of our shepherds would love to sit down and pray with you privately, if that's what you'd prefer. Or it may be that you'd like this church family to pray with you and for you. If you're wondering about doing that, let me just tell you, you are among friends, people who love you, brothers and sisters who care for you and want to do anything we can to encourage you. Let's be sure we're listening to the one who tells us what the blessed life truly looks like. If we can help you in any way, please come as we stand and as we sing together.